Chapter 15. 6th of January 2057, midnight, GMT. Midnight, Mel recorded. A new day, after this longest of days, and still no sign of the deleted sun in a star-littered southern sky. And Skythrust 2, in this unending night, had reverted to type, or rather to its designer's primary purpose. It had become a party boat, a kind of vast sybaritic resort floating above the troposphere, with lights blazing in the night and the overlapping sounds of music and laughter and the chink of glasses, even the clatter of cutlery on midnight feast plates. It was a kind of defiance, Mel thought. After all, the great vacuum lift ship relied on solar energy just as much as did the Almirich out in space. But Skythrust had a hell of a lot more battery capacity aboard than the fragile Mars ferry, and even a small nuclear plant as backup. But it felt cold enough here, Mel thought, on this deck, even under a clearwood air-conditioned viewing blister. She and the Astronomer Royal, with a few other dogged types, sat side by side in low-slung deck chairs, wrapped in coats, leggings, blankets, even big fur trapper-lined hats, keeping up this vigil of the empty sky, as pointless as it seemed right now. They were accompanied by a handful of other watchers, human reporters and a couple of drones humming in the air, observing the observers. There was some interest in their professional perspectives, evidently, but there was nothing to say, because there was nothing to see. Nothing, Mel supposed, other than a glorious nighttime panorama. The atmosphere could never have been more transparent, with whatever moisture there had been in the stratospheric air above having long condensed out. And tonight, there wasn't even the impediment of the zodiacal light. The background interplanetary glow reflected by the debris in the plane of the solar system, lit up by the sun on any other night. No sun, no glow. Even the equatorial belt of human-launched satellites and debris, usually a thin, sparkling band, was invisible tonight, without the sunlight to catch it. This, she realised, must have been the best night to observe the stars themselves from the location of Earth, since the sun had lit up more than 4 billion years before. Some thought. Then, just after midnight, one of her phones buzzed. Just as Marlowe's did likewise. With a rueful glance at each other, they consulted their screens. Mel's message was from she. Shit, she said. I see your shit and raise you. You first. News of Jim Boyd, the fiancé of my friend on. I know who he is by now. As does the whole world, I fear. Well, he still seems to be okay. But the internal temperature in that thin-walled habitat is still dropping steadily. Down to freezing soon. She checked the time. 2 hours since the shutdown. Sounds about right. Marlowe grunted. I suggest you look up the symptoms of hypothermia. That was the kind of seemingly unfeeling remark from Marlowe that Mel had learned was best left unanswered. She touched a tab to listen to a little more of Xi's message. His crew, locked in that storm shelter, with all his own warm clothing. What can they be feeling? What a screw-up. So you've got worse shit than that? I'm following feeds from around the world. The virtual meeting of the FIS Security Council has reconvened, finally. Thank the Lord that's gone above my level for now. I suppose our pal Fred Bowles will be supporting that, briefing his own superiors, the other ambassadors. And look at this. At the moment of nominal sunrise, in any given place, people have been congregating. Maybe that's the right word. Just coming out of their homes as dawn approaches. Or when it should be happening in their location. New Zealand, Australia. As if it's one massive New Year's Day celebration. There's no logic to it, of course, and a profoundly depressing response. Mel felt faintly irritated. Well, what are we supposed to do? Charlie, you can't condemn people for reacting this way, with awe. Surely that's a natural, even appropriate human reaction. I suppose so, actually. We, Melissa, are scientists, and we can't let awe hobble our capacity to think. But what religious fables do remind us, though, is that once people believed they lived in a universe shaped by the intention of a god, or gods, or other primordial beings, whatever. The Renaissance was our painful awakening from that fundamental belief. Well, I'm afraid this whole contemporary episode of ours is a cosmic phenomenon that does indeed reek of intention. Even that hard-as-nails politician Mara Kane seemed to see that much. You mean the timing of the, disappearance, to coincide with the eclipse? The action itself, the deletion, is almost beyond our imaginations. Perhaps it's meant to be. But the link to the eclipse is clearly deliberate, a message. And as we've seen from the beginning, a message that could only have meaning for minds on Earth, minds capable of interpreting that strange shadow. In some sense, this is all for us. Our task now will be to figure out what that message is, what we must do next. If we survive long enough to figure out anything. There is that. Mel tapped her screens again, longing for a fresh call, yet at the same time dreading any coming in. Certainly any from Jane, her daughter, who she hoped was sleeping quietly in her school in England.